top firm. The fact that QBS, you know, the process, it's not based on low bid like construction contracts. All construction contracts that I bring to the board are based on low bid competition. It doesn't mean that there is really no bid or no competition on this work. On our most recent bulletin, we had 28 items. We have received the statements of interest on that bulletin. We received 508 statements of interest. So there is obviously a lot of people out there who want to do our work and are willing to, you know, try to convince us that they are the best people to do that, to do it for us. There are a lot of benefits to the QBS process. Primary benefit is that, you know, it's based on qualifications and just not on price. It is a professional service. It's kind of like if you equate trying to find a doctor to do a knee operation for you. I'm thinking about that myself right now. You don't want to just go out and get the lowest price person that could do it for you. You know, I'd like to know that they have the ability to do it. They have past experience. They have the resources. They have a good reputation. You know, so that I have confidence that when he does it, the surgery, you know, I'm going to have a good result. And actually, that's what we're hoping to get, and that's what we do get out of the QBS process. It protects the tollway's interests. It allows us to select the most qualified firm for our specific needs. We present the scope of work for the specific project to the firm. The tollway does that. And then, you know, we meet and do a mutual negotiation to say, you know, this is actually what this project's going to take. This is how much it's going to cost. So that at the end of the day, we have some assurances that we're going to get quality work on time and according to our budget. Within the QBS process, the tollway's engineering department has an internal procedure that we utilize for evaluating the consultant statements of interest and arriving at the top ranked firm. We've also recently developed some enhancements to that process, and hopefully it's going to improve our efficiency and also give us some more robust documentation of the process. And I wanted to discuss some of those items. So as I mentioned, our current professional service bulletin had 28 items, over 500 statements of interest. Under our current procedure, a small team of executive level people would be solely tasked with reviewing all those statements of interest and then coming to the selection committee and deliberating and making the selection. This is not the most efficient way to do this, and with that large volume of statements of interest. In fact, in the program, we expect, you know, we would have on average 4 bulletins going out a year and probably receiving at least 15 statements of interest per item, which is going to translate into about 1,000 statements of interest that are going to have to be reviewed. It does take a lot of time and effort to do that. To respond to this challenge, we wanted to institute we are instituting a tiered process that's going to help ensure that we get a detailed level of evaluation of each statement of interest, and that we can do timely selections of the most qualified firms. So the first step in the process would begin with a larger group of engineers and representatives from the diversity staff who are going to do the detailed review of each statement of interest and develop an objective scoring to rank the respondents for each item. The second tier review and evaluation will occur with the chief engineer and at least 2 deputy chief engineers to further validate the results of the initial scoring and finalize the top firms that engineering prefers for each item. This tier is also going to look at the selection as a whole. The consultants, you know, they are not aware of what project they're going to be selected on, so they submit on multiple items within a single bulletin, and this second tier review would help us make some judgments on which item we feel that they would serve the tollway best on. The final step in the process would involve the presentation of the preferred top firms for each item to a selection committee approved by the executive director. It's typically comprised of executive level representatives from engineering, diversity. There are some other tollway chiefs involved. And also we always have at least one outside industry representative. It's typically a retired engineer that is recommended to us by ACEC, that's the American Council of Engineering Companies, or ISPE, that's Illinois Society of Professional Engineers. And then this selection committee does the final deliberation on the preferred firms, and a vote is taken. It's a written vote that tallies up the results, and the top ranked, it helps us determine the three top firms in ranked order, and that's what we're obligated to do under the law. Improving our documentation or enhancing it, we've developed some new forms and templates to document the consistency in our approach. We have an ISO procedure that we have added onto and fully developed that will codify. It does codify the entire process that I've just discussed. We've also reviewed these changes or these enhancements that we're making to our process with the American Council of Engineering Companies. They are a national organization. They are the ones who are behind, you know, the whole QBS process. And they actually have a guideline for how you go about doing the QBS process. They've reviewed all of the updates of our procedure. They've fully endorsed it, and they know, and they've given me assurances that they believe this is in full compliance with the law. Moving forward, we plan on implementing this new process, this tiered process, on our current PSB selections, which should come to the board. You should start to see items selected off of that bulletin come to the board in September, hopefully. And also, you know, while we were reaching out to ACEC, we did say, you know, what can we do on the statement of interest side of things to make it easier for you to do business with us? And they have given us some suggestions, and we hope to incorporate those in our next bulletin advertisement, which should also be coming out in the next couple months.
Could you give us an example of the kind of thing that
was suggested? Well, one of the things was, you know, they said you could limit the project approach pages to maybe just two. We say two or three right now. That helps a little bit. Also, as far as the resumes that they provide, they would limit it to just the key personnel, and we're going to more strictly highlight the key personnel that we advertise for in the bulletin, so that now some of the statements of interest that we get, they could be at least 100 pages. They put in, because they're not sure exactly what we're focusing on, they try to put in as much as they can on resumes and also past experience. So with the past experience also, maybe we would limit it to two or three project cut sheets, which would tell us, you know, some of the work that they did, so we have a comfort level that they can actually do our work. So those were some of the things that they brought to our attention. And, you know, I'd like to also, you know, work with Mike Fidelli, and after we go through the process, you know, do an internal audit, see how good we're doing compared to, you know, the changes that we're making, and make sure that we're staying on track.
Okay, questions? I have a couple, as usual.
Okay.
Just roughly, how often would you say you get to the point where you're negotiating on the price with somebody who's your first choice and you can't come to terms?
So I've been at the tollway since 1999. It's happened one time where, you know, we weren't able to come to an agreement, and the firm agreed, you know, they didn't want to take on the work, and we went to the second low, to the second preferred firm.
And that's basically because you've got an estimate on the cost in your mind when you go in, and they know that that's the price you want, and they're not going to try to negotiate it differently?
That's possible. You know, they may believe that, you know, they need to do additional things, or they need to have additional people, and we may not think that way. Or, you know, they could have a... Because, like I mentioned, they don't know which item they might be selected on. They're also submitting on work for other agencies. And they may have capacity changes that we aren't aware of and that recently occurred with them. You know, they may have dedicated one particular project manager to us who, you know, they were selected on an IDOT bulletin slightly before us, so that person's no longer available. We do our best to try not to have conflicts with IDOT's bulletins. We do stagger them so that we have a better understanding, you know, who's working for who.
So, if I get this right, I'm trying to see the big picture here. You, out of these 500, you got, what did you say, 28?
There were 28 items, and we got 508 statements of interest.
Okay, so you'll try to reach agreement on the 28 items? And you are trying, at the same time that you're trying to get the best qualified, most efficient, expensive, inexpensive group, you're also trying to figure out how to balance who can finish which projects, because people are bidding on more than one project. So you're thinking about what the capacity of the firm is to be able to do, if they bid on three projects, you know they can only do two, so out of the 28, you might let them do two.
Well,
this all is a question mark in the end.
We generally, because we have 508 statements of interest, I know it represents over 100 individual firms or more, so we know there are a lot of qualified engineering firms out there to do the work. We rarely, and I don't think we have, unless we rarely would select a firm for two items on the same bulletin. And we also, and that would be directly related to a capacity issue. And even saying that, you know, we also look back at previous selections, because we're trying to do our best to spread around the work around amongst the most qualified firms. I mean, they are obligated to convince us in the statement of interest that they are the most qualified. So we are looking at those things too.
Okay, and then I have a final question. Somebody recently said, why don't you have an engineer on the board? You really need somebody with engineering experience. And I'm curious if you think that having this independent appointed engineer on the selection process provides a safeguard or a function that
some people might think should have been provided on the board.
I know you would love to have an engineer on the board.
The reason why we do involve someone from IDOT too to be on our committee is because, you know, we have a good handle on what's going on with our work and the people that are working with us, and we know what the statements of interest have, but we're looking for these other individuals, you know, especially like the industry representative. Give us the industry perspective. You know, sometimes they know things that are going on, you know, out in the industry that we might not be aware of. And same thing with the IDOT representative. You know, they give us an idea that, you know, that a lot of the same firms work for them, and they provide some insight to us on, you know, work that's been done and potentially, you know, any new issues that are coming up right at the time, you know, that we're doing the selections. As far as the board goes, I'd be happy to have an engineer that, you know, was, you know, more involved and understood the work, but I get fantastic support out of this board, so I'm perfectly happy.
That's a great answer. The engineer politician that works.
Yeah.
Well, once you get to the process of a qualified pool for any given portion of the project, convince me why at that point, and I'm coming from more of a construction side, why competitively bid at that step is not the better process for the board.
Can you repeat that again?
You get to the point where you've created a qualified pool for the J. Adams portion of the shoulder widening, and they're going to be the firm. Why at that point, and there's five or six of those companies, and you know you've ranked them one through five, but obviously they're all qualified because they wouldn't be there. Why at that point isn't a competitively bid process not the better process for the board or for the tollway?
Competitively bid based on price.
Price.
There is a competitive bid based on qualifications.
Right.
And, you know, even though they are all meeting the minimum pre-qualification requirements to do a specific job, you know, we do look at the person's experience, the individual person's experience, the firm's experience, their capacity at that specific time, how their DB plan is put together. That is one of the criteria also that's evaluated. So I think, you know, we get to consider those primary criteria and make the best selection based just on that. And it still has a price component in the second step where, you know, then we sit down with the firm and we mutually negotiate you know, what the final contract dollar amount is going to be.
Like at any negotiation, at that point when they know that they are, you know, the top selected firm, it's a lot more difficult to get them to bring their price maybe into a level that might be more advantageous for the board.
And to answer that, the experience that we have right now, and our work, we do have some unique engineering contracts, but for in large part, they're very similar. It's all work on an interstate highway. It's all design or construction management. Those are the primary jobs that eat up most of the items on a bulletin. And, you know, we have a good handle on, you know, what we think that's going to take as far as the manpower requirements go. And, you know, we built up that experience over time. And, you know, we feel like we're in a good position right now where we know this is what it's going to cost us going into it.
We also have the Qualification-Based Selection Act, which is very specific about what we can and can't consider when we actually select the firm. And pricing, I think, is one of those things that it does mandate for us that we need to consider the qualifications first and foremost.
And if we go back to that slide 14, I think you're absolutely right. The question is, how do we exercise our fiduciary responsibility that we're not handing over the price?
Well, you can see where, from the outside, you can look at this with some doubt.
Yeah.
Always the right thing to be done, and not in any way doubting Paul won't.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's been seen in some places where it hit.
Right. So I guess the question is, at what level do we monitor the impact of price? And I would say what is suggested here is that if our overall percentage of program is equal to or about in sync with other programs, assuming that they're doing the right thing, that that's a way for the board to measure whether or not this process is actually working the way it should. And if we see that number creeping up, then we should say there's something the matter with the way this pricing is going on. And maybe, you know, if there's a lot of construction work, you come back to us and say, well, now we can't get people for the amount that we were getting them for before because there's a lot more going on and so the price is going up. But given the law, but given our interest in making sure that we don't spend more money on this than we should, that's why I'm thinking that this is the way the board has to look at this problem. I hear your question, and I think it's...
Well, I think in making sure that the bids are spread around and it doesn't become a couple of big firms that really dominate.
Right, the favorite. So, the good thing about this is that the work in progress, this is the quarterly report, and I think as these kinds of questions come up, maybe what we need to be doing is thinking, how do we report on a quarterly basis to the board on these kinds of things? And I think a lot of this is incorporated in here, but again, mm-hmm. if the directors would look at this and see, for example, on your question of, you know, are there some favorites, maybe what we need to be tracking in here is how many firms get repeat work over what period of time or something like that as a way of...
Well, and those things are identified regularly on our top firm list,
right,
which you receive regularly.
So we just we need to make sure that this has got the right stuff in it and we're looking at it. Other questions on this? Okay, thank you. That was very helpful.
So the next presentation that we have is on community outreach relative to the 294-57 interchange project. You know, that project along with the 90, the work that we're doing to rebuild I-90 are the two major, kind of first major improvements that are going to be delivered in the Move Illinois program, and we wanted to make you aware of everything we're doing on 294-57. We've got Rocco and Stephanie Stevens. They're going to be giving the presentation on outreach. So please go ahead and help educate us on what's going on 294-57.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much today. Try to be brief on this, but make sure you get as much information as you can on this. As you all know, we started the construction on the long-awaited Interstate 294-57 project. earlier this year, I believe in May is when we really started doing some of the work out there. This is a project that we're doing in partnership with the Illinois Department of Transportation. It's about a $719 million project. That's really going to do a lot to enhance the economies and connect the two interstates down there, one of two locations in the United States that where two interstates cross that don't currently have a connection between them. But really, the overall intent of this project is it's going to really boost the economic development and opportunities in Chicago Southland, mobility of freight, enhancement of mobility on their system. There's a lot of good opportunities that are going to be associated with this project. So some of the things that we're really trying to do on the outreach side of things is to make sure that there's a complete awareness about the project. We're trying to tackle this in multiple ways, and we've been working diligently to ensure that the communities that are adjacent to the area actually know that this project is coming, what's happening, when it's going to happen, and to make sure that they understand that the opportunities for the economic development are there as well. In addition to providing information to the communities and community outreach to residents, businesses, and others, we're also working to increase diversity throughout the project. And Stephanie's going to talk a lot about some of the things that we're doing on the diversity front regarding number of contracts, opportunities, making sure, again, we raise awareness not just to the people out there, but to the contractors and the businesses around there. As I said, you're going to hear a lot more about this from Stephanie. So what are we trying to do to raise awareness? You know, we've been working early on with media. We've got signage out there letting people know that this project is happening. Well, you can actually go out there now and see construction, so that's an easy way for people to understand that something is happening. But we want to make sure that they understand what it is that's happening out there, because this project that's been talked about for many years. So it's making sure that they understand that this is the real deal. We're going to do the interstate-to-interstate connection right now, just not small improvements. The way we're doing this is through a multitude of ways. We're working with communities, with our customers, with elected officials. We've been going out and meeting a lot of the elected officials, state and local, different community groups, providing information, and seeking feedback to ensure that we are giving them the sufficient information where they can educate their constituents or their whomever it might be. The media tools that we're using are communication medias. We've got a lot of fact sheets about the projects. I've got some folders that we've been handing out to people that have a lot of great information in there, just the snapshots of what's happening on the different fronts about creating jobs, how we're going to enhance mobility through there, what the project's really about, how we're going to be saving drivers time and money and fuel savings, but also information about the types of contracts that can be expected throughout the project, how the interchange is going to work when it's done. It's going to be an all-electronic or cashless interchange, both the interstate-to-interstate connection and the local, so we're educating people about how that will work and providing some maps. We're in the development stages right now of a project newsletter that will be released later this year to, again, inform people, and drop it in the mailbox, send out emails, get the information into people's hands, let them know what's happening, when it's happening, sharing the stories of how we're going to proceed. From a local front, what we do have now is a project office. It's our construction communications manager that they established a project office in Oak Forest, not too far from where the interchange is located, off of I-57 in Cicero. It's an office, it's in a professional building. It's there for our staff, say for the staff that's working on the construction of the project. But it's also there for people from the community to stop and get information about the project, find out about the timing of the work that's going on, and to pick up sets of plans, whatever it might be. So it's, again, it's a local presence to share information and raise awareness about the project. As I said, we're having ongoing meetings with legislators and community groups. We had a quarterly briefing. I mean, be a little bit more than quarterly, or I should say less frequent than quarterly as we proceed. But our first one was held on July 11th. It was really to bring in the officials and the community officials throughout the area and let them know what's happening with the project, how we're starting it off, really to hear what some of their concerns are and what the opportunities where we could share information with them to continue to make sure that they have the information to get businesses to start relocating in the area, to understand what the economic development potential is going to be. So we've had that July 11th, and the next big step.
Yeah. What was the turnout like?
Oh, I don't know, 20-ish, I'd say, maybe, give or take. It was a meeting of the elected officials. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't necessarily the big town hall meeting, which we're going to do in August. So we had the communities that are directly adjacent. We threw out the net a little bit deeper to get the township officials involved, some of the economic development people, some of the communities from a little further out as well. So just, again, just a more of a regional focus. So it was a more of a presentation discussion type of meeting that we really had with them. Because it wasn't just about us talking, it was about us listening as well, what the issues and opportunities were. One thing we clearly heard coming out of that is really economic development and freight. Those are the big things that they want to see happen down in the Southland. There's huge opportunities to enhance freight mobility and the connections between the interstate and rail. So these are going to be the things that maybe we can work with these communities on and getting the awareness out there, not just to the people who are affected, but to those businesses and to these freight companies to let them understand this is happening. Because we've talked about this project several times before. So now it's just a different form of communication. So the next thing that we're going to be seeing on the community outreach front is going to be a town hall meeting sometime later in August. We're targeting the date right now. It's going to be likely at the tail end of August. So that's some of the stuff that we're doing on the community outreach. And I said Stephanie's going to talk a little bit more about the diversity. So if there's any questions about that outside of this. Thanks.
Okay, so to build on what Rocco has said about gathering information from the community, I want to start off by talking about some of the efforts that the Diversity Department of Strategic Development put in place. We did a series of focus groups and held more than 20 meetings with diverse organizations just to gather feedback and learn what we could do to improve our program based on things that were learned, lessons learned in the CRP, the prior capital program. Out of those focus groups and meetings, we had a number of recommendations that we were going to focus on. Those recommendations were the unbundling of larger contracts, because we knew that the folks believed that that would create a range of job sizes and spur a broader range of participation on our contracts. We needed to look at greater bonding and insurance options, which would also create a larger pool of contractors that are able to work on our projects. They mentioned that we should look at training and technical assistance, including mock bid scenarios and training programs and partnerships that would make the businesses more competitive, and enhanced communication of our bid opportunities. So all of these things have been those things that we've been focusing on to begin to put in place for the Move Illinois program. So specifically on the I-294, I-57 interchange, we are creating more opportunities for minority-owned, women-owned, and disadvantaged businesses, as well as for small businesses. One of the main things, as I just mentioned, was the unbundling of contracts for the greater range, and we'll have a list of what some of those unbundling packages have been to date in a couple other slides coming up. We've done a number of networking events for both professional service firms as well as for construction companies, having more than about 400 individuals come out to hear about the program. Just 2 weeks ago, we held our first webinar, Construction Contracts 101, which was a free webinar for anyone that wanted to participate. And that allowed businesses that may be new to the tollway to learn about all the paperwork that's associated with bidding on a construction contract. And then we've been doing some hand-in-hand with the unbundling of contracts. We're exploring initiating a small business type program that will also allow us to get not only certified DBE and MBE firms, but also just smaller firms to participate in our programs. Again, the major challenges that bonding and insurance requirements are oftentimes a barrier that we are still continuing to look at and finding some solutions to that bonding piece. And I think Rocco was going to talk a little bit about this one.
Sure. So when we talk about bonding, actually, you know what I want to do? I want to make sure I call somebody out. Barbara Stubblefield, who's sitting in the back, if you could raise your hand or wave. We've got Barbara. She's really what she's doing for the tollway now is really assisting with all the outreach. She's our community contact person, working, splitting her time between here at the tollway office and down in the Oak Forest office, really to keep her fingers on the pulse of what's going on within the community, within construction, and the diversity community as well, to make sure that, again, we're providing the information that's necessary. But when we do talk about unbundling of contracts as it relates to 294-57 project, you'll see that we currently have it's about 13 contracts with values between $200,000 and about $4.2 million, with a cumulative value of about just a little under $12 million, $11.8 million for this phase one work. Some of this could change as we proceed, maybe adding some different contracts on, but again, what we're trying to do is unbundle the contracts into these in these smaller package sizes. But this is really intended to promote the opportunities for these smaller businesses, and it's not just through the unbundling process to create opportunities for a diverse workforce. We're looking at the subcontracting opportunities within each contract in and of itself. So here are some of the contracts: the building demolition, tree removal contracts. There's going to be about 2 to 3 contracts in tree removal, utility relocation and the installation, some of the off-system improvements, a little under $500,000, some landscaping contracts. We're going to have up to 5 contracts on landscaping throughout the life of the project, and then at the tail end of the project as well. And then just some of the other off-system pavement reconstruction work. So these are some of the unbundled contract opportunities that we've already identified, and we'll continue to seek other opportunities as we go along.
So just to talk a little bit more about the networking, back in March, we held the professional services outreach session, and we primarily focused on mentor-protege relationships. We wanted the smaller firms to meet with the larger firms so that when the bulletin was going to be issued in June, I think it was, that they would have established those relationships for any of those that didn't already have those relationships. So we talked a lot about the mentor-protege. On the construction side, that networking session was held in May on the 18th, and Chrissy, as well as Paul Kovacs, and our director, Gustavo, was there, talked with folks to explain about the program, because we're really having a push about getting people involved on the construction side. So we talked a lot about the unbundling and our efforts to, again, we talked about what the recommendations were that had come out of the focus groups, and talked about our focus on unbundling many of the contracts. So those have been very well received. We had the construction webinar, and the thing I want to repeat here is, for those people that were not able to participate on the particular day, July 12th it was, this DVD has now been put online. We're sending out notices to all the agencies as well as legislators and other people that have expressed an interest in it, so that they can alert folks that the DVD is available on our website, that people can again look at it if they missed it. So, because some of the information is only pertinent at the time that you're actually bidding. So if you haven't bid before, then you might want to review some of that documentation and paperwork right when it's time for the bid to come up. But some of the things that were covered in that webinar were understanding the critical documents, what the bonding and insurance requirements were, and we actually had our risk manager, John Hawk, to participate on that webinar with us, what the contract policies and guidelines are, the different aspects of the diversity program, and even included tips for becoming a subcontractor. Okay. So far I've talked a lot about the construction contracting side for subcontracting, and just to talk a little bit more about the employment side. I think you're all aware that we have the Earned Credit Program, which is a rewards initiative that allows contractors, or incentivizes contractors who hire from a pool of underemployed individuals by rewarding them with bid credits that they can be used on their next bid. This has been a pretty successful program, at least it was during CRP, and we're now trying to ramp it up again and get it started so that many of those people that are interested in employment will find a way to these jobs through this program. And so the next thing we want to do now, we have a ECP video, which is also available online, but we're going to show that video at this point.
Move Illinois is expected to create 120,000 permanent jobs and add $21 billion to our economy. But this program goes beyond building roads for the next generation. It provides important opportunities in the construction industry for contractors, subcontractors, and workers alike. As part of our effort to diversify and expand the pool of firms and individuals doing business with the tollway, we created the Earned Credit Program, or ECP. The Earned Credit Program is a rewards initiative that allows contractors and subcontractors to earn credit towards future tollway construction bids when they hire from a pool of qualified, pre-screened job candidates, including underemployed African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, women, ex-offenders, and veterans. Credits are earned when contractors hire ECP workers and retain those workers on any construction project anywhere within the state of Illinois. These bid credits are virtual dollars that contractors can apply for future bids on tollway construction projects. Operating engineers and structural steel iron workers earn 50 cents for every dollar earned. Skilled union trades and fabricators such as a carpenter, electrician, trucker, or a cement mason earn 40 cents for every dollar earned. Union laborers earn 30 cents for every dollar earned. Credits can accumulate quickly. For example, an operating engineer making $39.75 per hour earns approximately $82,680 annually. At 50% credit, that's $41,340 earned in bid credits for a year's worth of accumulated hours that the contractor can then apply to their next tollway bid. And that credit is just for one hire. Bid credits can afford contractors and subcontractors a bidding advantage in a highly competitive industry. A bidder can apply its ECP bid credits to lower the bid amount and increase the chances of winning the contract as the low bidder. Subcontractor earned credits can also be added to a prime contractor's bid in order to increase the chances of winning the contract as the low bidder. ECP Community Partners operate construction pre-apprenticeship training programs. They pre-screen ECP-eligible job candidates to meet specific physical, drug-free, and other requirements. They also provide job training and readiness skills. Contractors looking for new hires contact the tollway for qualified ECP job candidates. The tollway then reaches out to their community partners for a pool of qualified candidates. Resumes are forwarded to the requesting contractors. Contractors conduct candidate interviews and are responsible for all hiring decisions. Union participation is a key component of the ECP program's success. If the newly hired ECP worker is not a current union member, contractors can sponsor the new worker into the appropriate construction trade union and receive an additional $5,000 bonus bid credit. Encouraging contractors to hire ECP workers helps underemployed groups gain employment while learning a valuable trade. With billions of dollars of Move Illinois capital program funds available, competition for tollway business is intense. Contractors and subcontractors alike are working with the Earned Credit Program to stay ahead of the competition and win tollway business. Start earning credits today. To participate in the tollway's Earned Credit Program or to learn more, visit www.illinoistollway.com or email ecp@getipass.com.
Okay, so thanks to Communications for updating that video for us. And again, it is available online. So our focus right now is, because we're in the Southland and haven't worked primarily in that area before, is to find partners that can help facilitate employment of residents that are living in that area. So we're looking to Barbara is helping us in that effort. We're also, we just met recently, or actually this week, with both IDS as well as the Building Trades Council president to understand which unions may be open and are available for people to seek training to be ready for it, all the construction work that's going to come out of Move Illinois. And all of those things are in preparation for a meeting that we'll be having, convening all of the ECP Advisory Council members, current as well as new, coming up, I think, in September. And then we're also planning to host a kind of construction career awareness fair, so those people that may not currently be construction ready can understand what that process is. Okay, so I just talked about some of that moving forward. I guess the only other thing I want to talk about here is just our continuing efforts to make sure that we're getting the word out. We do have an email alert that we send out for every contract to all of our assist agency partners. We have increased our list of firms that we send plans and specs to so that they can be available to those within the community to review so that they will be encouraged to bid. And we're continuing to conduct outreach. We have a number of efforts, not only that we're hosting ourselves, but we participate in those that others are conducting. So we will continue to work closely with the board and provide periodic status on the results of these efforts, and we'll improve on what works and adjust our strategy as may be needed. And we thank you for your support, and if there are any questions, we can take those now, either myself or Rocco.
Any questions on this? Are there, have we established a tentative goal for the ECP program for the Move Illinois? Do we have a number in mind?
Actually, we have not established a goal. If we look back to the five-year period of CRP, we had about 100 candidates. That would have been 20 per year. So if we look at a 15-year program, times 20, maybe about 300. And I'm just making that up, and we'll have to really look at, see how that works. But
it looks like you're putting a lot of effort into it, right? Good to be thinking about, what needs to be addressed here. Looks good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Christine, anything additional? No? Okay, so then we'll turn to the consent agenda. We do have a number of things that we're going to take up in executive session, so we'll finish this and then maybe, we'll see if we need to take a break then. But as I repeat this every board meeting, but for anybody who's new to this process, I just want to make sure that people understand that these items have been reviewed in the committee. Oh, I'm sorry. You know what we should do? Director Reddick, we should do the report from the committee first. I'm sorry. We delayed that on the agenda. Well, may we ask you to do your report?
Sure. I apologize for being late.
That's okay.
I didn't change my calendar. Our committee's actually meeting after this this meeting. We had to reschedule our meeting. So
okay, I thought we were going to hear about the May meeting, but we'll do it today.
We had postponed the report out from the last meeting. I'm not sure if there was anything from May that you thought was important.
Who couldn't remember what happened in May?
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, I apologize.
Oh, that's fine. We can, at the next meeting, if there's anything we need to do, we'll report on the meeting for today. Okay, let's turn to the consent agenda, which has been through the committee process. I think we can take 1 and 2 on finance. May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? On procurement, I think we can take 1, 2, 3 through 7. 1 through 7, may I hear a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. On number 8, Director Peterson has asked to be recused. So, may I hear a motion on 8?
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? And we'll show Director Peterson is recused. On engineering, we'll take number 1 and 2. Director Towns has asked to be recused on 2, but since he's not here, he can take that.
One item.
Oh, I'm sorry. I see that. And then see that he recused on that. May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? That passes. Okay. On legal, we'll take number 1. And this is one where Director Darcy asks also to be recused. So may I hear a motion on that?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. We have land acquisition under legal as well, but that we're going to defer at a discussion in executive session. I think we will come back in open session and have a resolution.
We may have a board action necessary, and maybe we will on litigation.
Okay. Is there any unfinished business that anyone would like to raise? Any new business? I think we now entertain a motion from the General Counsel to put us into executive session.
Thank you, Chair. We'd recommend a motion to proceed to executive session of the board pursuant to certain exceptions in the Open Meetings Act this month, pursuant to Section 2C11 to discuss certain tollway litigation, 2C2 to discuss certain collective bargaining matters, 2C1 to discuss certain personnel matters, and 2C5 to discuss real property matters related to tolling.
Thank you. May I hear a motion on that?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any extensions? We'll go into executive session, and then we will come back. Do you want to take a break now, or do you want to... Okay, we'll take a break for 5 minutes. Thank you.
Came around the executive session, back in committee. We have two items that we need action on. Council, could you direct us on a motion for both land acquisition and for directing staff to proceed as recommended by board on the acquisition policy?
So the first would be a motion to approve the administrative process settlement for the parcel of land discussed in executive session. Executive session at a cost to be as determined in the executive session.
So move.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
And then a motion to direct tollway staff to memorialize the confidential policies as agreed at executive session today for proceeding with land acquisitions in the administrative settlement process, and for staff to immediately begin conducting itself in accordance with that policy.
Is there a motion?
So move.
Second.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Any additional business come before the board? Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Meeting's adjourned. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.